All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Grant, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are located across the main foyer, kind of on a diagonal up a short flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. Our preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we will be discussing Step 1, Part 2. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Our normal format is we have a nice little table up here, there's a couple panel members do a little reading, and then the panel members take turns reading. But we've elected as a home group that the last Monday of every month for a little while, we're going to try out having a lead speaker, who tonight will be BJ, who I'll have come up here in a moment, and do some readings, and she'll give us a little lead, and then I'm going to call on a few people, and we'll kind of cycle around that way. So it might be a little different than what you might be used to if you've been here before. So we're going to start on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, a goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. And then we're going to go to page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. This is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. So I'd like to have you all bring BJ up with a warm applause.
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
Everybody hear me okay? My sobriety date is April 26, 2015, and Simple Actions is my home group. I sponsor and I have a sponsor. And I love talking about the mental obsession because it took me a long time to admit that I had that. I think I always kind of knew that I processed alcohol differently from most people. My college friends had affectionate names for my multiple personalities when I drank. I was the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and you honestly never knew what you were going to get. I had, sometimes when I drank, I got really depressive and sad and crazy. Sometimes when I drank, I was a lot of fun and a party animal. And I recognized that that wasn't necessarily normal because my college friends drank and they were the same way every time. But they also only had a few drinks when we went out, and I could never stop at a few. So just a little bit of background. When I got to AA, I came to in and out of AA a couple times, and my experience was it wasn't until I got a sponsor that I wasn't able to stay sober. I mean, I think the reason for that is once I got a sponsor, she immediately started giving me instructions, and these were just suggestions, but at that point, I was so miserable I was willing to do anything. So I started taking direction from this lady, and one of the first things she suggested was read the doctor's opinion. So I know Grant was just reading mostly from Bill's story, but I want to hearken back to the doctor's opinion really quick. For those who don't know, that is the preface of the big book, and it is literally the opinion of an actual doctor who is not an alcoholic. And in that chapter, it says that we alcoholics are bodily and mentally different from our peers, from people who drink normally. And like I said, I never had a problem believing that I had, they call it a physical allergy to alcohol. I knew that when I put it in my body, I reacted differently than, for example, my husband who puts it in his body and nothing happens. For a normal drinker, they'll have a drink or two and they start to feel relaxed. And if they have more than that, they start to feel a little nauseous, a little out of control, and they don't like that feeling. So they stop at one or two. When I have one or two drinks, I start to feel energized. I start to see the world in technicolor. I see possibilities everywhere. And there's no way in hell I'm gonna stop at one or two. I have to keep going. All of a sudden, I look like Angelina Jolie. I got the personality of Ellen DeGeneres. I'm just finally who I wanna be and I'm comfortable in my own skin. Why would I stop? Why would I stop at one or two? And even if I wanted to, I don't have that choice because, like the doctor explained, I have this allergy where I need to drink more until something physically stops me. So I got to AA and I was sure of that. And I thought that was my problem. I thought that's where my problem stopped. And I honestly, my plan was to come to AA, separate myself from alcohol for a certain amount of time, and then I would be done. I wouldn't ever have to drink again. I wouldn't have to come back to AA. Once I put some distance between me and booze, I'd be good. And I heard a speaker say recently that if our only problem was that we were bodily different, then detoxes would turn out 100% recovery. But that's not the case. It wasn't until I tried to stay sober for chunks of time and always went back to the drink that I finally understood my full condition. And I have plenty of examples to back that up. So using my husband, he is not an alcoholic. We can go to a wedding or he can go to a bachelor party or something like that and drink and even get drunk. And you know, he comes home and he's like, whew, I don't miss doing that, you know. I don't know how he did that in college. And then he'll go like 3 months without drinking. Like he does not need to 2 or 3 days later go to the store and get more to drink. Even once the alcohol's out of his system, he's not thinking about it. He can sit down to dinner and have a beer, or crazy as it is, even part of a beer. That blows my mind. Like actually kind of pisses me off. I don't get that at all. For me, it's not like that. I think the first time I realized that without being able to articulate it There was one, so I was never really able to leave it alone for any length of time. And I would typically, the last 5 years I drank, I was a daily drinker. And by the way, every single morning I woke up with a resolve to not drink again. 5 years of trying to quit on my own, unsuccessful. So that's about 2,000 days worth of waking up and saying I'm not going to drink today and then drinking. But about 5 years before I finally got to AA, I had a really, really rude awakening. One night I was at a party, and I think I was still in college, and I put my hands on somebody I loved in front of a group of people. I tried to beat somebody up. And, you know, there had been times where I had driven drunk and run my car up on the sidewalk and stuff like that, and I woke up the next morning and thought, oh, I can't drink. I need to stop. I need to at least not drink today. And, you know, by 2 p.m., a drink sounds like a good idea. But that particular thing, that particular instance was enough that I woke up the next morning and I said, this is exactly what I needed. I cannot safely drink. I have a problem, and I'm not going to. I'm not going to drink anymore. I put my hands on somebody I love. Like, this is what I needed. And what that looks like is that first day, that memory is so strong that I can use that to stay sober that day. And, you know, I'm never going to drink again at that point. And then the next day I wake up and that memory's a little more distant. And I think, well, I'm just not going to drink today. I just need to go. I need to go without drinking for a little while. And then somebody down the street invites me over to a party, and I go because I love parties. I like socializing. And everybody has a drink in their hand except me, and I'm not drinking, and I'm fine, you know. I'm freaking out, and I can't even hear anything anybody's saying. All the conversations are just like a buzz of noise, because all I can do is see the drinks in everybody's hand. And something interesting is happening too. I'm like coming out of my skin. What I'm wearing isn't right. I can't hold my body like the correct way. The things I'm saying are awkward. I'm coming out of my skin. And you know, but I don't drink. And I go home, and then the next day I wake up and I have the day off, and I have all these things I need to do. I need to clean the house and go to the grocery store and, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I think to myself, you know, I've gone several days without drinking now. Why don't I go sit on the front porch and watch the sunrise with an Irish coffee like a normal human being, you know? Like a cup of coffee, shot of whiskey, it'll be good. And then I'll get into the house cleaning and everything I need to do. And I sit on the porch with that coffee, and I take a sip, and I'm like, drinking like a normal person. And then 30 seconds later, that drink is gone, and I have to go get another one. And then a minute later, that one's gone, and then I'm off to the races again. And that's how my mind works. And again, I know we're not reading from the doctor's opinion, but I did want to read this one sentence. To the alcoholic, their life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And I don't think there is a sentence in this book that I relate to more than that. and it's nothing I can put my finger on. Restlessness is just like, if I'm here, I need to be over there. If I'm there, I need to be here. I'm never in the right place at the right time. I'm thinking about what I need to do tomorrow, next week, next year. I'm never in the moment. Irritability, you know, looks like everything is getting under my skin. I get on 264 and I get pissed off just because somebody passes me in the passing lane. Like, what's that about, you know? And my supervisor is picking at me. You know, something small, like I'm trying to wash produce in our kitchen sink at home, and my husband like dips his cup in to get some water, and I say, gee, thanks. And, you know, I'm snapping at him for no reason. And And God forbid I call my mom on the phone. I'm mouthing off at her for no reason, and I'm just, everything is getting under my skin. And discontent is the core of my disease, because it's never enough. No matter what I have, there's something better. My spouse doesn't understand me or pay me enough attention. My job, which I used to think was a dream job, now doesn't pay me enough, and I don't like the hours I'm working. And my apartment is old and falling apart. And by the way, I'm like almost 30. Why am I still in an apartment? Like, why do I have to share walls with people? Like, I work full time. This is BS, you know. And that is why I need to take a drink. When I stop drinking for any length of time, my life does not get better right away. It gets worse, because life just gets so heavy. And eventually, I have to take a drink. Unless I ask for help. And that was my experience. I think my final wake-up call was I came to a meeting of AA, and I thought that was going to be enough. I went to that meeting, and I was scared. I wasn't sure what to expect, and I heard 5 different people tell my story. And I honestly thought I was the only person who drank like I drank. And more importantly, I didn't know there was anybody else who felt like I felt. And it was like I had come home. I was in this room full of people who understood me. They understood how I drank. They understood why I did it. And I finally identified as an alcoholic. And after the meeting, a woman pulled me aside and said, "Hey, I got some suggestions. Here's a meeting list. Here are some of the meetings I like. Here are some phone numbers. Call those phone numbers. Keep going to meetings, and I recommend you get a sponsor." And I didn't do any of those things. I thought that knowing I was an alcoholic, that was going to keep me sober. So I walked out of that door and somehow managed to stay sober for like 2 weeks. That was the longest I ever made it. And didn't go to another meeting and didn't reach out to anybody and didn't get a sponsor. And finally, 2 weeks later, 2 weeks, the alcohol's out of my system. I don't have that effect in my body. I'm not, you know, the detoxing's over with. Stone cold sober. I pick up a drink. And that is when I truly realized how screwed I was. I realized it's not as simple as admitting I'm an alcoholic. It's not as simple as putting time and distance between myself and the drink. I'm always going to go back to a drink. I have no idea what to do. And then and only then was I willing to come back to AA and ask for a sponsor and start taking actions, which were, as it turns out, were sufficient to put some time between me and the drink. And for now, I think that's all I have. Thanks.
Now for the hard part, I got to pick on somebody. I'm actually going to ask Jerome to come up. Yeah, you, Jerome.
Hey, everybody, Jerome.
Hey, Jerome.
And I sat sitting there, and I'm hoping that he doesn't call on me, because I don't want to get up and say anything. I just want to sit there and see what I can steal. And just listen, and thanks for your share, BJ. What? I'm not speaking loud enough. You know, and I'm thinking about my experience when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous also, and how unimpressed I was with what people were sharing in the rooms. And you know, BJ spoke about the uneasiness and discomfort and all. And that's how I felt when I sat in my first meeting. You know, I just didn't want to be here. I wanted to get up and I wanted to run out of the room, you know. And I'm the kind of guy that it took me a whole lot of years to admit to myself that I was indeed powerless over alcohol.
I'm the kind of guy that they sent to three level three treatment programs, 6 weeks at a time. And each time I wasn't powerless over alcohol. I wasn't an alcoholic. I'm the guy that that quit drinking a lot of times, but I never stayed stopped. I would try to detox myself, and I'd go like 3-4 days cooped up in the house, stuck in the house, because I couldn't go outside. You know, I shook like a leaf. I didn't know if it was going to be a fart or if it was going to be something else that came out of me. Anything that I put in me, I couldn't keep down. And I still wasn't an alcoholic. Yeah. Each time I got over the withdrawal symptoms, I would say that it was time for me to go try to drink again. And the hardest fight that I can say that I experienced with active alcoholism was getting that first drink down. Yeah, and I had to get it down. But yet and still I didn't realize that I was powerless over alcohol. Yeah, I would fight, I'd put it in me and try to swallow it and come back up. I'd put it in me and I'd try to swallow it and come back up. And then finally when I got that first one down, I would say, okay, cool, I'm fine. This is all I need. And that would start me off for the rest of the day. I'd spend the whole day drinking. Yeah, but I wasn't powerless over alcohol. I'm the kind of guy that I became homeless and that I ate out of trash cans and stood in front of 7-Elevens first thing in the morning. Not because I had money to buy the booze, but because I hoped you had enough money to help me buy my booze, you know? But I wasn't powerless over alcohol and my life wasn't unmanageable. You know, I was a dressed up garbage can. I stayed clean, yeah, on the outside, but I was really terrible, terribly filthy on the inside. And on June 26, 2001, I ended up in the VA hospital for because it was there, and I could qualify, and they offered me 3 hots and a cot. You know, and I said, cool, I can save some money. I got a warm bed, food, blah, blah, blah. And I'll do this, and then I'll go out and I'll get drunk again. But one of the requirements there was that I go to meetings. And as I went to meetings this time, I had enough time away from the booze this time. Instead of 3 days, 4 days a week, I was able to accumulate some months. And Alcoholics Anonymous seemed like a good idea. And I started taking the suggestions that were offered up to me. But, you know, it wasn't just the suggestions, it was the life experiences that I had to compare my life with and to that allowed me the opportunity to at least start to get honest with myself. Yeah, so I liked it. What was read. You know, I relate. You know, and the really neat thing about this process is I don't have to relate to everybody's story in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, as a matter of fact, I don't have to relate to anybody's story in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I need to do is look at my own story and put it up on the wall to see if I'm really being honest with me. Yeah. And then I can reference off of what you have experienced. And if I haven't experienced it, that's okay. You know, it's just a matter of time for a guy like me. You know, so I don't know what else to say. I'm done.
Thanks, Rob.
Grace?
think I like the other format better.
I hadn't been to this meeting in a while, and I walked in, and I got that look from Leanne. I'm like, no, they're not going to do that tonight. Yeah, they are. Step one, BJ, thank you. You're a lot younger, and yet you just told my story, except with a few changes. Every drink I had was my step one. Every drink I had. It beat me into a state of reasonableness, and that's what happened to me. I did not have to come in here and be convinced. By the time I got in here, I again found my people, except you were sober, and you told me how to stay sober. And that's what I wanted to know. In the short version of what my life looked like, I quit drinking. A lot of bad stuff happened, a lot of bad stuff. What I thought couldn't get any worse, and I put the booze down in 1987. That's a long time ago. And I thought that was my problem. I thought if I didn't drink, I'll be fine. Now, I did practice the marijuana maintenance program in there, but I didn't think that was a problem either. It didn't ever cause me any trouble. I was a great horticulturist, you know, it was cheap. And then life went on, and as I heard BJ describe my state of mind, irritable and discontent, but I didn't know that's what that would look like. And meanwhile, I was reproducing more human beings and taking lots and lots of hostages along the way. And life went on, and then eventually, 15 years later, for nothing horrible had happened. I don't tend to drink because I'm having a bad day. I drink because I'm having a good day. This thought came in my head, and I know today I've heard it, I've read it, that they call it the strange mental twist. My head said, oh, I can have a drink. It'll be different this time. And I went to a party for a client, and I had a glass of wine. And it was awesome. And I didn't get shit-faced that day or that night. I had a few. I came home. My husband looked at me. I didn't say anything. I was sitting up in bed watching The Sopranos, you know, the song. And he looked, came around the corner, and he goes, you've had a drink. And he knew, because I was happy. And he hadn't seen that face in a while. So, and I don't think a day went by after that that I didn't have something. And he was bringing it to me. Why not? I wasn't chewing him a new one every 5 seconds, you know? This in his face. You. And that went on, and things got very bad. And I wound up giving away, burning down, and torching everything I loved, had, and came in contact with, including my children, homes, my career. And eventually, suicide was the reasonable option. And for whatever reason, I know today it to be God, intervened, and I made a phone call instead of proceeding with the pink lady chic razor idea. These are my good ideas. And I made a call, and here I am. I knew that drinking was no longer an option. I didn't want to drink. I didn't know how not to drink. People would say to me, you know, I love it. Somewhere in the big book, I can't quote it exactly. You know, she's such a pretty girl. Why does she? People would say, why are you doing this? You know, when I put down that drink in 1987, I never walked into the rooms of AA. And I have DUIs and I have all of that stuff. But for whatever reason, it wasn't part of my early story. I never was introduced to this. I come from a family of hard drinkers. They drink successfully. I don't. I don't know what it's like to have a drink. From the very first time I had a drink, I wanted it all, you know, at age 12. My siblings, they function. God bless them. I don't. But I needed to know how to live and not drink anymore. I needed to know how to do that. So when I got here, I'm a product of a rehab. I remember being driven to that rehab, talking crazy, thinking, I said, I don't want any parts of AA. I don't know anything about AA, but I knew I was coming to a 12-step program. And I was still batshit crazy. And they just kept driving, drove me across state lines and dropped my ass off with $20 and a carton of cigarettes. And that was in 2011. And I walked in, and there was a private counseling, and it was the first time I ever saw the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the point to my story. That was my solution. I remember looking at the 12 steps on the wall in this counselor's office, and it, like, lit up. It looked like the way out. It didn't look hard. It just looked like if I can do this. I'd had no fight left in me. I get to sponsor women today, and I don't know why they asked me to sponsor them, because when I got here, I didn't have shit. I didn't have a job. I was unemployable. I was homeless and broken. And these women come up to me today, and they're pretty, you know. They have houses and husbands and cars and jobs, and I don't get it. You know, I don't get it. But I share my story, and hopefully, I think they're afraid they don't want to get as bad as I was. That's got to be it. But today, it's amazing. I wake up every day, and I can't wait to see what's coming. I did not get all the stuff back on day 5, or 500, or 600, or 700. It's been an inside job. A friend of mine, I'm from Chesapeake. My home group is the Sunday Night Big Book Study. It's awesome. Come see us, 5:30 on Bainbridge. He talks about, you know, I am powerless. I will always drink again unless I pick up the set of spiritual tools laid at my feet. That's, you know, and in between there is the steps. In between there. I will always drink again unless I find another way to cope with life. So that first step, I got to tell you, every single day I wake up and I am still unmanageable. I am unmanageable, unless I have a power greater than myself. If I try and run my show, I'm fucked. My very best ideas got me here, and so I have to learn to depend first on y'all. That's what, when I walked in, I'm going to quote 12 and 12. it says, under the lash of alcoholism, I'm driven to AA. And here I find out what the hell the problem is. And unless I'm beaten into a state of reasonableness, why would I do the rest of this stuff? Why would I do it? If drinking was my problem, I'd have been fine not drinking. But I have a disease of the mind. And my best ideas get me here. So I hope this format sticks. It might be cool for a while. Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
All right, I'm going to do a little more reading and then have BJ come back up. I'm going to be on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that I had an alcoholic mind. The time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. And then page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. You're back up.
Yeah, going back to restless, irritable, discontent for a minute, I forgot to share this. There was one dry period, I'm sure it was brief, they always were, where I remember I was at work, and our break room at work has like our fridge, and then we have staff lockers right next to the fridge. And I discovered that somebody had absconded with my lean pocket, like a low-fat hot pocket. So I went over to the lockers, and I kicked the bejesus out of the lockers, and everybody in the room like froze and looked at me, and they're like, and I'm like, yo, I need a drink, you know. But I love what Grace just shared, because I either need a drink or a sufficient substitute. And I have found that in AA, thank goodness, because I can't go on living like that. I am going to have to kill myself or someone else, you know. That's no way to live. That isn't insanity. I love the part Grant just read. It's Fred's story in More About Alcoholism. There are several different stories in that chapter, and that's the one I relate to the most. I really love that he ends up drinking, and then nobody sees him for like 2 weeks. He drinks on the plane ride home from his business trip, and then instead of meeting up with his wife to take him home, he like finds a cab driver, and they're off for like 2 weeks on adventures. And I would do that. Like, That's what happens when I drink. So it's a nice reminder. But also, just where the very last part he read, at certain times we have no effective mental defense against the first drink. So I had been in AA and sober for exactly 6 months. And the day came, and by the way, I was supposed to be working on step four, and I was farting around. And What that means is my willingness was gone. You know, I was comfortable. I had gotten to AA, I'd been sober for some time, and I was not putting in any work, which the suggestion I had been given was you need to be taking action. And the day came when I don't think anything specific had happened at work that day. I'm sure if I had to go back and inventory it, it had. But, you know, at that point, I wasn't there yet. I just got home, and my husband had pulled up, and for whatever reason, I think as many as a couple weeks before, I had gone to get something out of the trunk of his car and noticed that we had a bottle of dessert wine in the trunk of his car that from, like, some Christmas present from a few months earlier. And, you know, I didn't tell anybody about that. I just kind of shrugged it off because it didn't bother me at the time. And I start thinking, I'm going to go get that bottle of wine, and I'm going to crack it open and drink it. And I even called my sponsor. And, you know, she talked to me about going to a meeting, something like that. And unfortunately, I had already made up my mind. Like, It's good that I reached out, but it's that, like, you know, that sense of ease and comfort you get, or at least I got, when I just knew a drink was on the way. Like, sometimes I didn't even have to take the drink. Just knowing I was going to drink gave me that from the restless, irritable, and discontent. And I had gotten that, and I'd made up my mind. And what, looking back, I had not completed step one. I thought that 99% of me thought I was powerless over alcohol. There was still a little bit of doubt. And so I waited for my husband to get in the shower. And at that point, I knew I had about 6.5 minutes. I ran down, got it, opened it, and started to drink it. And, you know, I lost my sobriety. And it wasn't so much the drunk, it was that state of mind, I don't think I'm powerless over alcohol. I got very lucky that did not start me off on a spree. It absolutely could have, for I think that in itself is divine intervention. I never stopped going to AA. That was the only drink I had. I immediately reached out to my sponsor, picked up a white chip, and kept going in the steps. But one thing that did happen was I felt this impending sense of doom. Like, it was this feeling like I was teetering on the edge of death, honest to God. I knew I had to throw myself back into this program, and I knew how good life had gotten in those 6 short months, and I was like, no, I either keep going on this journey or I die. And it was very clear thought in my head. So I did, that's the grace of God, that is not me. I did keep going to AA, and my sponsor had me, we started over in the steps, she had me write 2 lists. One was a list of every time from my past that I drank more than I had intended. And the other list was every time I had set out to not drink and I ended up drinking. And of course, it's like rolling out a scroll. They were a mile long. And I think just seeing that on paper changed something in me, and something clicked, and I flipped over to, I'm 100% sure I'm powerless over alcohol. So we launched on a course of vigorous action. We worked through 1, 2, 3. I started on a 4-step. I did it quickly. We thoroughly went through it, and I kept on with the steps. And within a certain amount of time that same year, and it happens different for everybody, the obsession to drink was removed. And that is a miracle. And, I really chalk it up to finally realizing and admitting that I was powerless and being willing to take a lot of action. And just the fact that one day it happened, I walked into a pizza parlor for lunch with my coworkers, and it's the same pizza parlor we went to every week. They had this shelf of some liquors and some Italian wines up behind the cash register. And for the very first time, I didn't look at them. I didn't notice them. After like the end of my workday, I realized, oh my gosh, I didn't notice the alcohol. Like it hadn't even occurred to me that there was alcohol in there. And as a matter of fact, that same year, a few months later at New Year's Eve, I was at a party and I was snacking on the hors d'oeuvres, and I got around to the desserts and I got a brownie on a napkin, and I was talking to somebody and I put it in my mouth, and whoever made it had soaked it in some kind of liqueur, and with like I didn't even have time to think, I just spit it right back into the napkin, and that was not me. And that, where it says his defense must come from a higher power, you better believe that was a higher power moment. Like that was literally like recoiling from a hot flame, and that is what this program gives me. It's absolute neutrality to alcohol. Every once in a blue moon I think about it. I'm not going to tell you I don't. It's very few and far between. And I just, it's nothing like back in the day where you're just waiting for that mental obsession to go away. It's gone. Now, there are other mental obsessions that arise after being sober. But like it says in the book, for us to drink is to die. So first and foremost, I gotta keep sober. I gotta keep working in this program. I gotta keep coming to AA. I get to keep coming back to AA because, it's just incredible to me that for somebody who was who drank for 12 years, who drank and got wasted every single day for a 5-year period, to not even think about alcohol anymore just floors me. And actually have a short story about that. This program is incredible. So when I was newly sober, I had this like list of non-negotiables, like I think I'll be able to stay sober unless this happens or this happens. Things like, if my spouse ever cheats on me, I probably won't be able to stay sober. Or if I get fired from a job, I probably won't be able to stay sober. And the top thing on that list was, if anything ever happens to my dad, I don't think I can stay sober. I'm a daddy's girl. I'm an only child. My dad's one of my best friends. We're very close. He's a retired business owner. When I was little, he spent his only day off during the week taking me fishing, camping, hiking. He's one of my soulmates. He's not doing too well right now. He has been in and out of the hospital, and we're honestly not sure how that's going to end. But I've watched him in the past 3 weeks go from someone who worked out 3 hours a day to someone who can barely get out of bed. And I'm not telling you that to feel sorry for me. I am telling you that to say this. There is no part of me today that wants to take a drink. None. And that's incredible. And even more than that, I have a sense of peace about the situation. And if that sounds sick and twisted to you, keep coming back. Because, when it first happened, I wasn't there, but I have surrounded myself with this fellowship, and I have AA has given me access to a power that has removed my obsession to drink, but it's been given me so much more. The fact that I can walk through something like this, I never would have thought it was possible. But on the other hand, if I were drinking right now, God, it would be so bad. It would be so bad, and it would only make it worse. But today, I get to leave it in God's hands, and I know that it's going to work out the way it's supposed to. And that might sound naive, but I know it's true. And I do have a sense of peace about that. And there is no problem today that I don't have the tools to walk through thanks to AA. And this is an absolutely wonderful way of living. So thanks. That's all I have to share.
Jonathan, you want to come up here?
Really?
Yeah.
Jonathan, how am I supposed to follow that? Today, I'm receiving all the gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous today. I got to tell you, just like BJ was sharing, there is hope here. There really is. I can barely keep my head in the game today in an AA meeting. Like, my brain is going in all sorts of places just from the amazing gifts that I'm receiving in this program today. The thing that struck out to me that everybody was talking about is the insanity that gets just the how we're like caged animals when it comes to alcohol, like BJ was talking about with her husband goes in the shower, and the immediate thought that pops into the alcoholic's brain is, I know I have 6.5 minutes because my husband takes a shower from this time to this time, and it's just like the plan spontaneously appears in your head and everything just makes sense. It's like the drink was meant to happen. And that's how my brain talks to me too. That's exactly how my brain talks to me. I've never, Grace, holy crap, I'm bad with names. See, Alcoholics Anonymous does work miracles. I could think about someone other than myself that I actually remember somebody's name. Like, your story just touched me, because that, I specifically remember the brief sobriety moments that I had, which were very few and far between, my friends would be like, Jonathan, for the love of God, please drink. I hate you when you're sober. You are a giant dick. I can't deal with you. And just when she talked about her husband saw her, and she was like, you took a drink, because they know, and all the people around us know. They just know. You can just look at my face and tell whether I'm drunk or not, or whether I've got something going on, you know, in my life that is spiritual or not. The people can just tell. And I say this pretty often. I try to gauge my spiritual condition off of how other people are reacting to me, because I'm a terrible judge. But like I talked about, like everybody's been talking about today, I'm just absolutely completely insane. When taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous did not make me magically delicious by any stretch of the imagination. Let me go for a week without, you know, prayer, meditation, 10, 11, and 12 in my life, which is my sponsor. When I took the 12 steps, he had me draw a line between the 9th and the 10th step, and the top is the part. He said, I want you to write the steps we took above this line, not the steps we work. And this is for me. This is my experience. This might get you drunk. I don't know. This is just what I did. He said, these are the steps we took. You don't work them. You tried working everything. And the reason you're an Alcoholics Anonymous is because you tried working shit. These are the steps you take, and you like it or you leave and find someone else to sponsor you. And then below that line, he had me write the design for living. And that was 10, 11, and 12. And that's just how I bang with things. Because I'm completely insane. You let me go for 2 weeks without doing a program like this, and 7 years of sobriety drinking sounds like a great idea. It'll be 8 in January, and drinking still sounds like a great idea when I'm not doing this program. But those thoughts are so few and far between, I can't even tell you the last time I thought about taking a drink. And that's absolutely insane, because I'm a guy just like Grace. I've never had just one drink. I've never thought about just having, no, that's not true. I have thought about having just one drink. It was one of those page 32 moments where I'm like, I'm going to buy some Johnny Walker Black Label. And I'm gonna light this fire in this fireplace that I don't own. I've never had a fireplace. And sit in front of it like Ron Swanson and just enjoy this one glass like a man, right? That's what I'm gonna do. That was one of my ideas. And I tried that once, and it's like lizard brain takes over, and immediately it happens. I take more, and then the bottle's gone in relatively 2 days. Sometimes it's gone in one day. I tried the fancy beer thing. If I just buy fancy beer, I won't spend as much on alcohol, and I won't drink as much because it's fancy and it costs more money. As soon as that frickin' crap, what the hell was I drinking? The stuff that monks made back in monasteries, it comes in little bottles where you gotta pull the little metal thing and pop the frickin' cork out of the top of it. Like, this is how bougie I get. Like, this, it's crazy. As soon as that beer hits my lips, I drink all $75 of the three bottles that cost $75 to buy. They're all gone that night. That's how my brain operates every time that hits my lips. And it's even worse when I'm not drinking. It is entirely worse when I'm not drinking, because I am one of those sad, miserable sacks of crap that is just constantly going through an existential life crisis when I don't have something inside of me to make me feel better about myself. Life is meaningless. I'm going to hell. Nothing matters. I am a piece of shit. Or I am exceedingly arrogant, and I am the coolest kid in the room, and all of you are inferior. And my brain will cycle between those within two to three minutes of each other. I'll go from thinking I'm the world's biggest pile of dog feces to thinking I'm the best thing happening. You better hide your girlfriends, because here I come. Like, that's completely delusional behavior, completely delusional thinking. But that's my mindset when I don't have something going with God. I lost both of my parents at a very early age. I handled both of those very poorly. In fact, I'm still dealing with the repercussions of the way. So when my mom passed away, I walked into her room, and her corpse was lying there on the bed, and I discovered her body. Within a relative 20 minutes of going through the entire process of dealing with everything that was happening with my mother being dead, I had a bottle of whiskey in my hand, and I don't even know where it came from. And then I proceeded to go to the strip club and leave my then girlfriend, who's now my ex-wife, you wonder why, at the house with my stepfather, who half of my family thought had something to do with the murder of my mother. I left her at the house with my stepfather, who people thought murdered my mother, had something to do with it, so I could go to the strip club. And I somehow convinced everyone that this was okay, this is what I needed to do. This is what a guy like me does when I'm under the lash of alcoholism. I'm not a nice guy. I'm really not. I am an unlovable creature. But recently my nephew passed away. He had a genetic disorder. So, I mean, everybody knew what was gonna happen. We just didn't know when. And I was able to show up and be present and just be and not make it about me. And that is entirely a gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every time I think about all the gifts that I've received in this program, I'm extremely grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The miracle is that I'm looking at like 60 freaking people here. Just every freaking day there's 60 people in this room. And the love that you guys showed an arrogant, self-centered fuck like me, pardon my French. I know you guys are recording, sorry, I curse a little bit too much sometimes. Just the fact that you welcomed me in with open arms and didn't kick me out when I first showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. And that every time I show up to a meeting of AA, there's always a hand there to reach out. I'm not the miracle. AA is the miracle. And one more thing and I'll shut up, I promise. That desperation that comes from taking a drink. I was just talking to somebody about this before the meeting started. Alcohol, going out and drinking again is the best way to work a first step. There is nothing like coming into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous saying, yeah, you guys are, that's great and all, but I don't want any of this God stuff. I'm done with this crap. Going back out and drinking with a head full of AA, there's nothing like it. Absolutely nothing like it. And this is, once again, this is me. This is my experience, and whether this is your experience or not, it doesn't matter. There's 1,001 ways to work AA, and as long as it's based out of the book, in my experience, I found it's usually pretty good, and it helps people save their own lives. When I have the honor and privilege to sponsor somebody, and we go through the first step, they're like, I say, call me every day, read this book, show up the meetings with me at least a couple times a week, depending on what your work schedule is. And then we sit down to go through the steps, and I say, do you feel like you're powerless over alcohol and your life has become unmanageable? And they say, yes. And I say, okay, let's go on to step two. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about? Last time I came into AA, my sponsors took 30 days, 60, 90 days to go through the step one. And I said, you showed up. You obviously want what we have because you're sitting here reading a book with another grown-ass man, usually on the weekends when you could be doing better shit with your life, like, you know, playing video games or chasing women or making money or doing whatever. Looks like you're pretty convinced that you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable. You sat in a Starbucks with me while all these hot women in yoga pants were walking by and read another book with a grown-ass man. That was what I had to do. That's what happened when I showed up. When I realized that my life depended on this crap and I was willing to humble myself to take those actions, I was powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable. It's time to move on to the next step. Because I'm not a spiritual guru. I don't levitate. I don't have a whole lot to teach people other than what's in this book. And my sponsor describes it as being the pizza delivery guy. I show up, I deliver the pizza. Whether you eat the pizza or not, you know, that's your prerogative. It's just my job to deliver it. And the more I remove myself from it, besides my experience and what it's like to completely screw your life up through drinking and not drinking, as long as I remove all the rest of the stuff, the dogma, my cool ideas, it's usually a pretty effective way to have a program in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for letting me share.
All right. That wraps up the sharing portion. I'll read the self-support card. The Seventh Tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general services office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
John, Alcoholic. This coming Friday, Candlelight is having a potluck starting at 7 o'clock. Candlelight is at 8 p.m. at the Presbyterian Church. It's right across the street from Fairgrounds. 8 o'clock on Fridays. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
Perfect.
Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We just want to get your first name to welcome you.
Hey everyone, I'm John, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John. That's it? Okay. There's literature available over yonder. If you want any books, they are for purchase. They have prices inside the cover. You can see me after the meeting to buy a book. Otherwise, any of the other literature you can fold and put in your pocket and take it to go. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. A reminder, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. And a reminder, all meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, if we could please just a round of applause for all that shared this evening, including BJ. And BJ's not usually too shy. She'll probably be up here afterwards. You can come thank her after the meeting. Thanks to all who participated, and after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, down on 21st and Colonial. So if you make a right out of here, go down Colonial. If you cross the train tracks, you went too far. Can I get a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Jimmy?
My name is Jim. I'm
Hey, Jim.
The book is meant to be suggestive only. You realize you know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what he can do each day for a man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact about for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you tread the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Jimmy. And if we all get rounded up, we'll say the Lord's Prayer.
Give us this day our daily bread.